Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. Underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies. So you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Welcome to Make It Happen Here, a podcast about things falling apart and then maybe kind of putting them back together again, sort of. This is a special episode about thing that happened, where thing that happened is the Brazilian election. And with me to talk about this is Garrison.
Hello.
And James.
Hello.
So I think people probably know by now, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, better known as Lula, has defeated Jair Bolsonaro in a absolutely terrifying squeaker of a presidential election. This is like by far the closest election that Lula, a former two-term president of Brazil, has ever won. Part of this is a campaign of last minute voter suppression that Bolsonaro and his supporters did, where the Brazilian federal police started setting up like 550 roadblocks to stop people in Lula strongholds from voting. There's like they assaulted people. It wound up not mattering. And right now, as of time of recording, which is 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Halloween, Bolsonaro is missing in action. There's no like no one's seen him. The only sign of life that there has been from him is he unfollowed his wife. Amazing stuff.
It sounds like he just locked himself in the presidential palace and turned all of the lights off.
Yeah, he's missing it. Nobody's seen or heard from him. So by the time this episode comes out, there's like a small chance there's been a coup. There's like a small chance he's died from COVID. I don't know. Probably neither of those have happened. But, you know, so Lula won his election. Like he won like 50.8% of the vote, roughly. And OK, so there's a lot of voter suppression, but even voter suppression cannot explain why Lula, who won his last elections with respectively 61% and 60% of the vote, was reduced to like 50.8% this time. And OK, so this begs two questions. Who is Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and how did we get to this election? So the first episode of this is going to be answering the first question, and the second episode is largely the second question. Okay, so who actually is Lula? Lula is born in 1945, actually. His birthday is a few days ago, to a desperately poor family in Brazil's northeast. And this family moves from the northeast to what became known as the ABC region of Brazil, which is Santo André, São Bernardino, Santo André, São Bernardo,
Jesus. Who can't say names in Brazil now?
Okay, here's the thing. This is not a famous name. This is Sal Bernardo.
Wait. Wait, are you conflating Brazil and Argentina, which are famously not the same country?
Also, sure different languages. Here's the thing. If this was in Spanish, I could do this. I'm gonna make this disclaimer here. All of my pronunciations of this are based on my terrible knowledge of Spanish. The problem is Brazil famously speaks Portuguese, a language that is not Spanish. So there's a thing called the ABC region because there's three cities there that are ABC.
Got it.
As part of this sort of mass migration, which is popularly remembered as like this mass migration of people from the Northeast to Sao Paulo, but that's the popular memory of it. The actuality is that millions of people flow into Sao Paulo like from all across Brazil. The ABC region becomes Brazil's sort of industrial heartland. Like every story you read about this, we'll call it like Brazil's Detroit. And that's kind of true and kind of not true. Like, I don't know. Everyone who writes about Brazil is like, how can we make this the US? Yeah. And like,
God forbid other countries have their own realities.
Yeah. And like, okay, like there is an extent to which Brazil is also like the ex-slave colony thing, right? But no, like Brazil is its own country. However, the ABC region becomes the core of Brazil's massive metalworking industry. And this industry is just like from the 50s to the 80s, just like purely expanding. The historian J.D. French notes that the ABC's population increased by 800% from 1950 to 1980. So Lulu arrives in the middle of a veritable industrial revolution. This is going to end in one of history's sort of great militant industrial working classes. But when he's there, that's kind of not what's happening. Oh, the other thing I should mention about this region is that when I say metalworking, so there's the reason there's so many Detroit comparisons is that this is a region that is massively involved in Brazil's auto industry, which in this period is expanding and is very large. I think I've actually talked about this in the neoliberalism episodes. A little bit, but yeah, so Lula like leaves school in fifth grade to basically find whatever work he can in the street. And this is another sort of very famous thing that everyone talks about Lula, about how like he has like a great school education. And that's like sort of true. Like it is true that he never like graduate, like, you know, he never went to school past like fifth grade mostly. Although we'll get to some other stuff that he did later. What happens basically is that his mom's able to get him into this government metalworking sort of apprenticeship program that is teaching like young people how to basically become skilled metal workers. And this also is an education, right? Like, it, you know, the people in this, there's a lot of very interesting sort of like theory stuff about this, about how these people like are also kind of worker intellectuals, because in order to like be a metal worker and to do all this stuff, you have to know a shit ton of stuff. You have to know a bunch of technical stuff about how metal works. You have to know, you know, it's very highly skilled and very high, like, degree of knowledge you have to have. So, you know, he gets this kind of education. And he becomes a very, very good metal worker. And he's part of a highly skilled, and the academic literature will call it highly paid. Although, like, okay, this is highly paid compared to, like someone who's a worker but who's not, like, a metal worker, like one of the sort of skilled, quote-unquote, metal workers. They're not like, these people aren't like lawyers, right? Like they're still closer to the actual sort of working class than, you know, some like people who are sort of like auxiliary parts of the ruling class. And he enters, you know, he enters this sort of manufacturing boom as part of what's called the Brazilian Miracle. Well, okay, so he's there a bit before the sort of Brazilian Miracle starts, but there's this period under the military dictatorship, which takes power in 1965. Where they kind of like luck into a functioning economy. Although I should mention this now. So in this period in Brazil, like, inflation being good and under control, inflation is at 20%. Like, when inflation's at 20%, everything's considered fine. And when it goes up from 20%, it's like, oh no, we've lost control of inflation. And this kind of like, this is a survivable thing because people's wages are sort of indexed to they're indexed to cost of living increases to some extent, which is a thing that like
Yeah, it will never happen here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if you do the kind of stuff these guys do, you can probably get some of this. But yeah, so but the sort of interesting thing about what's happening here is you have a very large industrial working class, but it's not really very militant for most of the time Lula's in it, except for sort of right around the military, like, coup in 1965. Lula sees some of kind of like the old radicalism, like he talks about, like, you know, like watching people like storming factories because they're on strike. The Brazilian working class does, there's a lot of fun stuff that they do. Like, they do things like, okay, so everyone will show up to a protest with like a bunch of like pockets full of marbles. And when a cavalry charge starts, they'll all roll marbles down the street, and the horses will step on the marbles and fall.
It's an OG Battle of Cable Street maneuver.
My absolute favorite one. This is just like pure Looney Tunes shit. They do this thing where, okay, so they'll string piano wire up like between light posts. And then they'll bait cavalry units into charging at them, and then they'll run under the thing, and the guys will just get fucking clotheslined.
That's brutal.
It's so good.
Yeah, that's pretty great. It's horse cops. You don't see horse cops in America, but
not anymore.
Well, you see them sometimes. I have seen some horse cops.
Portland's horse cops only like stopped existing a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the UK, up until very recently, they used them to police protest.
Yeah.
There was footage from 2020 of people getting run over by horses in the States.
They still do this.
Yeah. It fucking sucks. There's actually, I think the most famous police horse related story in the U.S. is a Philly sports fan, I think in like 2014, punching a police horse, which...
Oh, what a city!
Yeah.
The most famous British police horse thing is the horse humping the cop.
Oh, God!
critical support to the horse?
Yeah, I'm just going to... Let's quickly copy the image into the chat so you can all enjoy it. I'm glad that I'm glad that we've taken this episode in this direction.
Oh my fucking holy shit. Oh my God. Okay.
See,
that is much more graphic than I thought it was going to be.
Graphic.
Holy
Do you know what else will take a cop and bend it over and nope. All right. Well, here's some
We can't
ads.
Promise that, Garrison.
Here is some advertisements.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
And we're back with other things that will scar my soul forever. Oh boy. up until sort of 1965, there had been a kind of left-wing government in Brazil, and then the military coup, like, just overthrows it. And the left is kind of just, like, annihilated from this. And it's not just from the pure political repression, which forces, like all the communist parties are forced underground, like, but one of the real things that sort of, like, really shatters the Brazilian left is that, like, the coup happens and the left, you know, the left sort of knows there's a coup coming, right? But they expect that when the coup happens, there's going to be strikes and, like, the working class is going to fight them and they're going to beat it. And everyone kind of just, like, in the factories kind of just shrugs and nothing happens and they just get rolled over. And this is the start of this period of sort of, like, you know, this kind of, like, the workers' movement, like, nothing is happening again. There's some sort of radical student groups trying to do stuff, but, like, I don't know, there's a Brazilian version of May 68, but mostly what happens there is, like, one factory gets occupied, and then the army shows up with guns, and they get owned, and it's really grim. And, you know, you have these sort of, like, tiny, like, actually, okay, you have these tiny Catholic Maoist groups, who are these Maoist student groups.
Wait.
Who were, yeah.
Okay, we'll just go straight through that, all right.
It's nuts.
Normal, totally normal.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're trying to do, like, guerrilla insurgency stuff, and the army just sort of, like, kills them all. They're horribly destroyed. So for almost a decade and a half, like, you have a very deep politicized industrial proletariat, and Lula's part of this, right? Like, from like when he enters the workforce until, like, the late '70s, he is not political at all.
Are they doing the thing under the dictatorship where they have, like, pet unions, I guess, where there's, like, one mandated union for the industry?
Actually, I was about to talk about this. Yeah, so the Brazilian labor system, and the thing is, okay, so this wasn't set up under this military dictatorship. It was kind of set up under, like, a previous one. But this, yeah, is still sort of a thing. All of the unions have to register with the state. And when they're doing contract negotiations, right, they're not negotiating with the corporations, they're negotiating with the state. And so this means that, like, the state is setting wage rates, which is going to become important later. But yeah, there's a really interesting sort of problem here, because there's this entire class of basically sort of, like, government union guy who's, like, basically a bureaucrat and is, like, really corrupt.
We love unions.
And yeah, well, and this is the thing, like, and, like, a lot of people just hate them because, like, they, like, you know, because they are, like, literally what these people are, like, they're a guy who's doing this job to get ahead, and then their job is to sort of, like, you know, technically it's, like, mediate the class struggle, right? But, like, what that actually means is, like, make sure that, like, there isn't actually sort of, like, make sure the union isn't actually sort of a source of class conflict. And, you know, this is the whole sort of thing behind this, because before, like, the 1940s, Brazil had this really, really militant, like, labor movement. They had a bunch of anarchists. Like, the anarchists tried to overthrow the government a couple times. They have these huge general strikes. The Communist Party is, like, a real thing. And then the government tries to, like, bring all of, like, you know, okay, fuck it, we're going to bring all the unions under our control. And it's still also true that these are, they're still technically unions. So there are people who are sort of doing union organizing in them, right? Like, they still do some regular union stuff. And, yeah, we're going to talk about this a bit more later. But there's, I don't know, these unions are fucking weird. Like, they're not, like, unions anywhere else I've ever seen. Yeah, but so the other thing, like, Lula in this point, like, is apolitical, right? People keep trying to talk to him about politics, and he's like, I just want to play soccer and, like, chase girls, and he talks about this, like, in speeches a lot. But his brother, who's known as Frei Chico, is a Brazilian Communist Party militant for, like, his entire life, and being a PCB militant in, like, the 60s and 70s, this is, like, life-threatening. The party is outlawed, everyone is so clandestine that, like, Frei Chico's own wife doesn't know that he's a communist and finds out that he's a communist when he gets arrested. Like, this is like the level of, like, clandestine shit that everyone that like, you know, the sort of communist parties are working on under here. But Frei Chico's also, like, an open union activist, and everyone knows he's a leftist, basically, because, you know, the even sort of, like, the unions are sort of, like, split between, like, there's sort of left factions that are, like, trying to actually do union stuff. But, like, towards sort of leftist goals, there are, like, more moderate people who are, like, bread and butter trade unionists. And then there's also just, like, a bunch of people who are, like, just the corruption faction. but yeah, like, Lula doesn't care about the union at all. Like, he's not even in the union until Frei Chico, like, his brother just, like, literally just, like, drags him kicking and screaming into running for an elected position in the union because, like, he needed a guy to run on a slate. but he couldn't run himself because everyone knew he was a leftist. So he was like, okay, I'm going to, here, brother, you run. You're not like openly a leftist. You can actually win this. And this is, you know, and then this works and he gets elected. And this is where Lula like learns politics. From the book Lula and His Politics of Cunning, quote, Lula would have to master the mundane aspects of union life, including bureaucratic routines, budgets, services, and preparing union assemblies. Lula would also undergo a gradual politicization through relationships with fellow directors, union lawyers, and staff, an activist central to the union's turbulent internal politics. Finally, Lula would need to learn about the repressive dimension of working-class life under military rule, including close supervision and surveillance by police, employers, and labor ministry officials. And what's interesting about this story is that, like, everyone around him when he joins this union, including basically his boss in the union, is a guy named Vidal, who's a very powerful union leader. Like, you know, his brother, too. Like, everyone thinks he's going to be this sort of, like, compliant, like, obedient figurehead. And instead, what they have done is they have created arguably the greatest politician of the 21st century. One of the things that's important to note here is that, like, okay, so, like, the unions are like, fucked up, right? And everyone kind of understands they're fucked up. These are still probably the most, like these are probably still the most competitive democratic elections that are happening in Brazil. Like, Brazil technically has elections. There's these sort of, like, two official parties. So, okay, so it's kind of weird that the military, like, is in power, but, like, they have this sort of veneer that they're not, and they technically sometimes have a civilian president. They have these sort of, like, parties that are kind of real. But, you know, the union actually has, like, there are, like, leftist slates, there are conservative slates, like, there's actual sort of politics going on. And Lula is actually able to sort of, like, make his mark through his ability to just, like, make friends with people on both the sort of, like, radical and moderate side of the union, union sort of political aisle. And this is because Lula is just, is funny, he loves playing soccer, he loves just, like, dancing and hanging out, and this lets him, like, win his election slate, like, pretty easily, because, you know, he's just very popular. So these are things that, like, I don't know, like, the other workers in the factory a lot of times don't care that much about union politics, but they do care about, like, they do care about soccer a lot. And so Lula's able to build a bunch of support, and this lets him sort of easily take a position in a union system that, like, it's basically a miniature state. Like, the unions have their own welfare programs, they have their own education system. And, you know, this is part of the thing about people talking about, like, Lula is, like, completely uneducated. It's like, no, it's not. Like, he spends a bunch of time, like, in classes that, like, the union, like, puts on basically, like, university and academic classes, right, for its workers and for other people sort of affiliated with them. So he spends a bunch, and this is, like, you know, part of where he learns sort of politics and where he learns political economy is, like, is through these classes the union has. And the union also, like, you know, I talked about, like, they run welfare programs, right? So he's like a social worker. Right. Trying to sort of, like, help workers and pensioners with his job. He gets this position that, like, everyone hates. Like, he has this position basically, like, running their sort of, like welfare program, and, like, nobody wants it, but he, like, does it, and he does it really well. And this makes him really popular because he's the guy that, like, you know, if you're, like, a pensioner, right, like, he's the guy you go to figure out pension bullshit. And he's the guy you just go to in order to sort of get stuff done. And yeah, and, you know, this means he's spending a bunch of time doing paperwork and, like, negotiating with government bureaucracy, and this makes him a very, very effective politician. Here's from Lula's Politics of Cutting again. But Lula also gained access to an even larger constituency at the union headquarters, a working-class public sphere. Do you know how many people pass by the union daily? He asked a journalist in 1979. At minimum, 1,500. Those frequenting the union did so for many reasons. Often for various sorts of assistance or assistencia, which I think is, yeah, like government, or like union assistance stuff.
Yeah.
Assistencia. But also to complain about work, shoot the breeze, or catch up with friends. Some union directors often arrived late to the headquarters and were always busy when they did. The gregarious Lula, by contrast, maintained an open door policy, and his office became a gathering point for rank and file workers, factory activists, and fellow directors still linked to production. And this is another thing that's sort of important about this is that, like, okay, like, once you reach, like, a certain position in the union, like, you're just a full-time union guy. And so there's a lot of people who, like, join the union and become, like, union people because it means, like, it takes you off the shop floor. And the government does this deliberately, right? Because it means, the thing that they're trying to do is create a sort of bureaucratic layer between the working class and, like, their union. But Lula's like still really connected to what's going on the shop floor because he's just like talking to everyone all the time. And the product of this is that Lula becomes a very, very, like, he becomes a trade union leader, becomes a very, very powerful one. He rapidly becomes the president of his union after some, like, Vidal, who's like his boss, there's this whole thing where he's trying to stay in power, but he doesn't run for president of the union because of some complicated political maneuvering. And so Lula ends up as the head of the union. Vidal's like, it's fine. I'm still going to be in control here. And that is not what happens. Like you have just given the presidency to like a genuinely, truly singular, like, political figure. But there's something that's very, very important about Lula that you need to understand to understand anything that's about to happen here. And basically since Lula is not a communist, this is very important. He could not have done what he's about to do, which is, you know, become literally like the living symbol of one of the largest strike waves in Brazilian history. He could not have done this if he was a communist. The military would have, you know, tortured and possibly executed him like they'd done with thousands of other communists. His brother, Frei Chico, was kidnapped and tortured horribly by the military, although he will insist that he didn't have it as bad as like a lot of other people did, which is true, but also like they tortured the shit out of him and it was fucking horrific. And the fact that like every single like person, like the fact that every single fucking member of the military dictatorship was not fucking like taken out behind a fucking shed, shot, and had their like corpses fed to dogs is like genuinely one of the reasons why we're here right now. This stuff is awful. It is
Familiar theme of the podcast.
Yeah. But
what to do with dictators?
You know, Lula and Chico's wife are eventually able to sort of get him released because he's not like a very high, like he's in the PCB, like he's in the Communist Party, like his brother, like, but he's not like a high ranking guy. And you know, the sort of cruel irony of it is that, like, they knew that he didn't know anything that they didn't already know, but they just tortured the shit out of him anyways. But one of the important things that happens here is his brother, like, under torture, like, insists that Lula is not a communist and, like, continues to insist this because he isn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like, people who are, like, and people in the military dictatorship, like, believe this, right? Because, like, they have a really extensive sort of intelligence network. Like, at this point, they've basically destroyed the Brazilian Communist Party. They've, like, captured and killed most of their cadre. And because he's not a communist, Lula's able to stay in the labor movement, even if in the short term after his brother gets arrested, he loses his job in the union. And he's able to do this because, like, beyond his brother, who, like, his brother has literally been, like, saying communist stuff at him for decades, and Lula's just been like, I don't care. And, like, a couple of other people who he's just quite kind of friends with. Like, Lula, like, he has no connection to the organized left. Like, he's not sort of, like he's not, like, a leftist, right? Like, in that sort of conventional sense. Like, he's not tied to one of sort of the old left political factions. And this means that he can stand in as a kind of sort of labor leader that the more moderate factions of the military dictatorship have been looking for, which is this sort of, like, non-communist, like, quote-unquote genuine trade unionist. And, okay, so, like, talking about, like, a moderate faction of a military dictatorship is always kind of fraught because, you know, it's a military dictatorship. But, like, all these people suck. It's also true that there are factions within the military dictatorship who... So there's a faction called, like, the Dungeon, which is, like, the people torturing all these people to death. There were other people in the military dictatorship who are like, this is really fucking gauche. Like, why are you guys doing this? Like, this makes us look bad. Also, why are you torturing these people? And those guys look at Lula and they're willing to work with him because, like, what they think they're doing is creating this sort of, like, authentic non-communist labor movement that will, like, work with them to stop communism. Like, sort of like the AFL-CIO, like, specifically, you talk about this, like, in the way that the AFL-CIO does in the U.S., like, working as an anti-communist force, they think that they can get Lula to do this. And Lula does a lot of stuff that, like, looks like collaboration to the sort of, like, surviving leftists around him. He develops, like, literally, like, personal relationships, kind of friendship. It's not really friendships, but, like, develops personal relationships and professional relationships with members of the regime. And, you know, again, it looks like he's collaborating, but that's not what's actually happening. What's actually happening is that he's holding these negotiations in order to sort of increase the power of the union and build this, like, safety network. Because he has these personal relationships with people in the regime, it means that he's not going to get fucking disappeared and his people aren't going to get disappeared. And this had happened to a lot of sort of other regular union activists who didn't have this kind of connection, just like get vanished. And the people he's able to build connections with, like, keep him from being, like, vanished and keep his trade unions from being slaughtered. And, you know, like the people in the military dictatorship, like, really think that, like, okay, they've gained that, you know, like they're gaining an ally in defeating communism. The thing they are actually doing is progressing their own grave diggers. You know who else is creating their own grave diggers, Garrison?
The advertising industrial complex.
Yeah. Yes. They have produced us.
We can dream.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Unbelievable. Well, in the meantime, so inside the new Batman game, you play as the four sidekicks after Batman allegedly dies.
Yes.
And the weirdest thing is that they, because three of the sidekicks don't usually have capes, they don't do any kind of mass gliding feature for city traversal. Instead, you have a really slow bat cycle, and then you have an almost Spider-Man-like grappling hook. And it locks onto anything around you. It's really confusing. And are we back? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And we're back. We should leave in, like, just like 2 minutes of Batman talk. Yeah, it was completely baffled. So... okay, the other thing about Lula, just as a person, is that fundamentally he's a negotiator. Like, his style is almost, like, Biden-esque, in the sense of, like, Biden sort of believes, like, talking to everyone across the political aisle, et cetera, et cetera. Except, like, okay, the key difference here is that Lula is actually charismatic. Yeah, but, like, you know, he will just sit there, like, with people across the aisle and, like, talk things out and negotiate with them. He'll talk with employers, he'll talk with members of the military dictatorship. But, you know, the other difference is that, like, okay, so Biden is like a consummate politician, right? Like, when he talks about, like, talking with people across the aisle, he means, like, Strom Thurmond, right? When Lula is talking with people, he's talking with everyone. Like, literally everyone he runs across, he's talking with random people at, like, union halls, at meetings, at picket lines, at, like, soccer games, at bars. And because he spends all of this time talking to people constantly, he gains this just, like, incredible ability to read crowds and, like, tailor messages for them and, like, figure out what sort of, like what sort of things will work with whatever person he's saying. And he gains this, like, absolutely incredible ability to sort of charm people. And it works on people, even on people who fucking hate him. Like, there are like, journalists who will spend literally their entire careers trying to destroy him. And but when they're asked about him, they're like, well, I mean, like, him as a person. He's really charming. Like, he's a nice guy. But, you know, so part of what he's doing in this period. This is the late 70s, going into the early 80s. He's playing this like this very specific like game of respectability politics of like not directly criticizing the government and like okay, so there are these strikes that start happening because okay, so it turns out that the military government has been trying to get inflation like the whole sort of economic system they've been doing starts to fall apart. And inflation starts to come back and they start doing these like measures to combat inflation. And the unions, okay, so originally no one had believed them, but the union has a think tank kind of, right? They have like a social sort of like center with a bunch of sort of like sociologists and economists. And they figure out that the union's been lying, the government's been lying about how bad inflation is. And then the IMF in the late 70s confirms this, that the military dictatorship has been lying about how bad its inflation is by doing statistical stuff. And this matters because they've been setting cost of living adjustments by a lower level of inflation than what's actually happening. And this pisses everyone the fuck off because they're like, literally the government is robbing us. Like they've been lying about how bad inflation is this is like a 30% income drop, right, for these workers. And this pisses everyone the fuck off. And suddenly there's these massive like protests. There were like hundreds of thousands of people, like 100,000 people will show up to a soccer stadium as part of a strike. Like, but you know, Lula has to make sure that everyone doesn't get murdered. And so he does these things like he avoids directly criticizing the government. He has this whole thing about how like he wants to negotiate directly with the employers. He like kicks out like leftist student groups who are like trying to like distribute like communist students who are like trying to distribute pamphlets at the rallies because he's trying to make sure that the strikers aren't seen as like communist subversives and instead as sort of like they're seen as like good, upstanding, hardworking citizens. And yeah, here's from that book again. Given the diverse outlooks, Lula represented himself as a thoughtful, righteous man who disparaged riotous behavior as unworthy and counterproductive. Like all honest workers, he called for the strikers to be disciplined and counseled against clashes with the police. He continually framed their fight as one with the companies, not the government or the policemen. And this, like, works because any more radical action probably is going to get everyone killed. And I mean, like when the strikes are going on, there's, like, they're getting buzzed by helicopters. There's like fucking army trucks everywhere. But you know, he manages not to get everyone killed. And the result of this is that Lula immediately becomes the most famous worker in Brazil. He's like on TV. He's leading strikes everywhere. Like there's these massive rallies. And you know, there's some really genuinely adorable stuff that's happening. Where like when he's giving his first speech to one of these rallies, it's like it's fucking raining. The soccer stadium is just mud. Like his podium is literally sinking into the mud as he's trying to speak. And this is like the first time he's addressed a crowd this loud. And he's nervous and people start leaving. And like, oh, so they're doing this. One of the other things I learned about this is how old the crowd mic is. So they're doing this thing that becomes known as the crowd mic where like you don't have a microphone or you can't reach everyone. So the speaker says like a sentence and then each person in the crowd says a sentence and it just sort of moves back through the crowd from everyone repeating it. And he's trying to give the speech. It's not going great. And like the workers in the front row start like yelling like, hey, you can do this, Lula. Don't worry. You got this. And then he like, and then this is like absolutely adorable moment. And then he sort of like, you know, he's like gets better at it. And like by like the second one of these, like people are just like in love with him. He is unbelievably popular. He's an incredible speaker. He's like, you know, and it's very easy to, and you see writing about this at the time that are like, that look at him and are like, well, this guy is literally like people are like calling him literally the messiah of the working class, right? Like this is the kind of sort of like acclaim that he has. Like there are after one of his speeches, like the entire crowd literally carries him on their shoulders from one end of the soccer stadium to the other. Like there are there are people like walking on stage and calling him like father and saying Hail Marys. Like it's fucking wild. But you know, but like and like when like sort of rich and educated people look at this, they're like, oh, these people are like blindly obedient to him. They're like they have this client patron relationship. He's like manipulating the masses, and that's not what's happening. Yeah. Like that's just not what's happening. Like he actually like the union votes against him like a couple of times. Like because he's trying to do negotiations, right? And there's this thing where if I'm understanding the story right, I think what happened is that he's trying to like negotiate like people coming back to work, so negotiations can continue as like a show of good faith or whatever. And the union's like, fuck no, we're not going back to work, and just like votes him down. And so like this kind of stuff happens, right? Like that, you know, like people respect him enormously, and he is like literally in some sense, he is like the avatar of the industrial working class. Like working class people look at him and like and they see themselves in him. And they see the power that he's able to sort of exert, how many people he's around there, and they're like, oh shit, the union is strong, like we are strong, we can actually sort of fight back. But it's not like a sort of client patron thing. It's just that like he's at the head of a workers' movement that is a force in and of itself and has its own agency and capacity to act. And Lula has to like negotiate with that. And like he has to sort of like rebuild their trust after he, you know, is taking a sort of more moderate line. He eventually gets like arrested in 1980, although he gets released after like a month. And from there, he gets to work founding like every important leftist organization for like the last 40 years. So in 1980, he's one of the people who founds the Workers' Party. In 1983, he founds the CUT, so the English translation of it is Unified Workers' Central, which like to this day is Brazil's like national trade union center. Like it's like their big union federation. And this is illegal at the time. But you just like, fuck it, we're doing it anyways. Like these people are losing the dictatorship, losing control. And the CUT like plays a huge role in how the dictatorship loses power. So does the PT to some extent. Like the PT like as a party are powerful enough that like they're involved in drafting the constitution. He's there for the founding of the landless workers movement, which is a social movement that like seizes land that's not being used and redistributes it to workers. He's heavily involved in the campaigns to sort of force the military out of power. And you know, as a military dictatorship like kind of falls apart and democracy like kind of like fully returns to Brazil in 1989, he goes like full into electoral politics. But the problem is that like he's kind of too early for his politics. He spends like the entire 90s just like getting his ass handed to him in elections over and over again. And part of what's happening, you know, part of literally what he's doing in the 90s is rebuilding the entire Latin American left, like from ground zero after the fall of the Berlin Wall and the sort of like global defeat of the left in the 80s. He's one of the founders of the Forum of Sao Paulo, which is the first of this series of sort of like meetings of leftists from Latin America and the Caribbean, which is trying to figure out like, okay, like, hey, what is socialism now that like the Berlin Wall is down and everything's sort of going to shit? And in 1990, that's a really bleak prospect. Like neoliberalism is completely ascendant. Nationalism has destroyed socialism. Like every sort of former socialist state's falling apart. Like capitalists are running rampant across the globe. Like literally entire communist parties are just like disbanding and all of their sort of cadre are becoming liberals. But, you know, as the 90s go on and people actually have to sort of like live under this, they increasingly realize that it sucks ass and that what living under neoliberalism means is like IMF structural adjustments and like the economy, like there's the Asian market collapse. There's a bunch of other market collapses. And, you know, after the Zapatistas sort of go on the take, like are the first like part of the left to really go on the offensive after their uprising in 1994, the left kind of starts to put itself back together. And this left, like, I think like this version of left, it's kind of dead now, but like, I think there are people who are old enough to remember it or like remember sort of like what it used to be. Like the slogan of this sort of whole like left, like one of their big slogans is another world is possible, which is sort of like it's a response to like Thatcher's there is no alternative. It's like another world is possible. This is the sort of like alter globalization left. Like this is a left that does the Battle of Seattle in 1999. And Lula's there for like all of it. Like after the Battle of Seattle, like he helps found the World Social Forum, which is this like giant meeting place for like international social movements. Through this whole period, like the left is sort of gathering its strength everywhere. Like, well, okay, in Latin America and also like, I mean, it is in a lot of places, right? Like in India, it's like Indonesia, to some extent the US. Although the US has this problem that 9/11 happens and yeah, that's a shit show.
Yeah, it's amazing how that this movement existed almost everywhere else, but not, to my knowledge, as significantly here.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had Seattle, right? But then when 9/11 happened, the big unions like pulled out of doing any direct action shit, and then everything kind of got ate by the anti-war movement, which
yeah,
and then the Green Scare.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Then that led to Adbusters doing and stuff at Occupy Wall Street, and then
yeah, and that, that's the last. Well, I would although okay, I would say this. I think there's a break here. Like I think Occupy is when that kind of politics died, because when Occupy that's went fair. Under, and this is the sort of irony of this that we'll get to next episode is that like you can there's a good argument that the place that politics actually died was in Brazil when the Workers' Party fucking like tear gassed and rubber bulleted the absolute shit out of a bunch of protesters who were like the Brazilian wave of sort of like that series of protests, and they crushed the shit out of them. It is horrible. Like this is one of my foundational sort of political memories is like fucking tanks rolling down the street, people shooting rubber bullets at people, like 7-year-olds getting tear gassed. It is a fucking shit show. But in 2002, yeah. Like, you know, it's not that we haven't gotten there yet. Like even the sort of like yeah. most cynical Trotskyite, like can't imagine the fucking PT rolling tanks through the favelas, which is what they're going to be doing in 12 years.
Yeah. And when Britain, yeah. we had, that was when, I can't quite remember when Tony Blair, maybe it was 97, but like the British Tony Blair, right? Like represented this other vision for the left.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is like people like, I like one of the books I was reading was like people talk about Obama as being like the end of the same wave, except Obama sort of like the even more so than any of the other politicians we're going to be talking about is a sort of like recuperation of this, right? Like, yeah, he's the guy who takes yeah. all his energy and is like, yeah. And yeah. okay, so we're going to get into like the negative side of all of this shit next episode. But like, in some sense, Lula does play a similar role in Brazil, and we will get there. But right now, you know, there's another part of this that like doesn't get talked about that much, which is that in the early 2000s, in Latin America, it's not just that like the left is winning elections. Like there are open revolutions going on. Like, I mean, there's a bunch of them. There's a yes. like arguably like the last communist revolution like ever happens in like the last sort of like the last gas of the classical workers movement happens in Argentina in 2001. There's this huge revolt against the IMF and austerity, and like this is the last time like in world history that like people occupy factories and then attempt to like take them over and use them as a way of seizing the means of production. People occupy factories in Bosnia and Herzegovina in like 2014, but like by that point, like those guys are occupying factories and then having like occupy meetings in them. They're not like attempting to sort of like seize production.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah. like these are real revolutions, right? Like there's a coup against Hugo Chavez that gets overturned yep. by another popular revolution. There's the water and gas wars in Bolivia, which culminate in like literally the capital is like entirely blockaded off from the rest of the country and surrounded by roadblocks, and the fucking government, like this is like in 2005, the government is like fucking imploding, the military's falling apart, like you know, like very like. And this is the sort of chain of events that brings Evo Morales into power. But like they very nearly just destroyed the entire Bolivian government. The cycle yeah. sort of ends with the Oaxaca uprising in 2006, where like the people of Oaxaca just fucking take the city and hold it for like a few months and like run it through democratic assemblies. And then like the army shows up and they get. Yeah. But like, you know, like there is a point like that was like. I think like in my lifetime, like the workers of a city fucking just took it over. This is stuff that like, yeah, you know, like I think now we kind of like we have problem. Like I think most people have sort of forgotten about this stuff. Like this was a moment in which like revolution and the destruction of capitalism was on the table.
Yeah. And like a lot of it, I'm not super, I lived in Venezuela for some of this time briefly, but it felt very possible in a way that like it probably hasn't since, right? Like
yeah
it was fascinating to see, like, and the cooperation between those countries was very real, right? Like obviously Cuban doctors are fucking everywhere, right? If you travel in
yeah
Brazil, sports thing there, but it was fascinating to see like people from here coming here, and I think they had that Sao Paulo forum, right, where they would, where these ideas would be exchanged, and that was very formative for me. It genuinely felt like it was possible for something as a result of this like ghoulish IMF policy that we'd had yeah. for the previous 20 years. People are like, no, fuck this. We're doing it our way.
Yeah.
And didn't turn out.
Okay. But great. This is what's really weird about Lula, because Lula's running in 2002 and he's watching all of this happen and his strategy his response to this is basically the analysis, because he spent the entire 90s running leftist campaigns and losing, right?
Yeah.
And his strategy in 2002 is he's going to move the PT, the Workers' Party, to the right, both in terms of messaging and in policy, so as not to sort of like scare voters. And he finally convinces the rest of the PT to do something he's been advocating for like decades, which is allying with sort of like liberal or conservative, like non-leftist parties, which they do in this election. And we're going to see how that goes later, because, oh boy. But, you know, OK, so like why are they sort of doing this? There's a few reasons. Partially, it's because Lula has been like losing elections as being like, OK, so we have to do something different. Partially, it's because the PT is a product of the collapse of, like, the PT, like, in the 2000s, like, the base that had formed that party has basically collapsed, right? The PT is, like, its core constituencies are sort of, like, leftist groups. There's, like left-wing Catholic groups and the sort of, like, the giant sort of, like, trade union stuff that, like, the giant workers movement that Lula is a part of. But by 2002... like the Catholic Church has swung back to the right. Like the sort of left Catholic people are on the retreat. There's very few of them left. There's, and we're going to talk about this more later, but the sort of giant industrial unions that like Lula had been ahead of, like, and that, you know, Lula's career and the PT itself comes from, have been shattered by sort of like by deindustrialization and the collapse of sort of Brazil's industrial economy. And the product of this is that without its sort of social basis, like Lula keeps losing elections. So he goes, okay, so his solution to this, and the PT understands this, right? Like, they're aware of the fact that, like, part of what's happening with them is that, like, they've, you know, they're losing parts of their working class base because that working class literally doesn't exist anymore. They're gaining a bunch of sort of middle class, like, leftist activists, but they need to find a way to sort of broaden their appeal. And so, like, he promises, like, openly gives us, like, speech about how he's not going to do like a quote rupture with the economy, which is what this party had been campaigning on, because, you know, the PT are leftist, right? The whole point of another world is possible is we don't have to live under capitalism anymore. Lula's like, no, guys, hold on. I didn't mean that. Like, we're not going to do a rupture. And instead what Lula does is pledges to and like stays in the Brazil's commitments to the IMF, including like fucking insane shit, like maintaining primary budget surpluses, which is nuts. Yeah. And, you know, and he, instead of
oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah, he stays in the, and you know, so Argentina famously, like, Argentina's solution to the sort of uprisings that are happening is that they default on their debt to the IMF, and they're like, fuck you, we're not paying. And Lula's like, nah, we'll pay, like, it's fine, we'll just keep paying it. And like, the PT itself is like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is happening here? Why is this happening here? Like, why is he doing this? And, you know, Lula's just like, well, okay, we need to take power. We need to do this to take power. And so he does. And weirdly, in the middle of this cycle of sort of like the resurrection of the left, he's running increasingly to the right.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, part of what's happening here is that there's an inherent problem that leftist governments have when they take over the state, especially when they take over a capitalist state by winning an election, which is that if you are in control of the government, right, if you control the state, your job is now to keep the economy running. And in theory, this isn't incompatible with leftist beliefs. But if you stop and think about what this actually means for a second, keeping the economy running means keeping the economy growing. And economic growth, right, means that capitalists have to keep making more money every year than they did last year. Like, that's what economic growth is, right? And this is a real problem if you are a leftist taking power. Because if you don't do this, you will, A, lose elections because regular people will get pissed off because when capitalists don't make more money, they start firing people. And B, the bourgeoisie, who only ever grudgingly accepts the left as sort of like a legitimate power in the first place, if they're not getting more money every single year, they will overthrow you. And, you know, Lula knows this, right? But the solution to this problem that these sort of like pink tie governments come to is basically to let a faction of the sort of national bourgeoisie, the sort of national capitalist class, the people who are like capitalists domestically, like they let them into this product of sort of like this nationalist developmental project. And so what this means essentially is you are buying a section of the ruling class off, right? You are giving them access to state contracts. You're doing state investments in infrastructure that helps them like expand things like mining so they can, you know, like take some of the profits from it. You're giving them preferential access to government contracts in exchange for sort of supporting you. And there's a lot of ways this can look. Like the MAS in Bolivia, for example, starts bringing these elites directly into the party with this sort of developmentalist faction. In Brazil, it looks like an alliance of something called the Centro, which is like Centrao. Sorry, my Portuguese is not good. Which is this like this sort of like ever present force in Brazilian politics, which is just like the corruption faction. It's like this series of sort of parties that are like kind of loosely knit, who kind of vote together, but who don't like they don't. The parties nominally have ideology, but like their ideology is I am like a local political, like powerful political person, and you are going to pay me or you will not be able to pass literally any bill ever. And OK, so they have to form an alliance with sort of these parties. And the other thing they start doing is that they are just literally literally start buying people off. And this leads to sort of like a bunch of corruption scandals that we're going to get to next episode. But while Lula is in office, this seems like it's working really well. He's able to sort of pay off the bourgeoisie and fund these social welfare programs for the Brazilian working class. And this has a massive impact, right? Like this lifts something like 20 million people out of poverty. And okay, and I and other people will argue about what it means to like lift people out of poverty and how poor they still are. But, you know, it is true these people have a massive increase in quality of life. Like people are getting running water in their homes for the first time. Like people are having electricity for the first time. It's also worth pointing out that Lula, who is white, spends a fucking shit ton of time fighting against racism and fighting for educational and job opportunities for black people, even though, okay, there's like an asterisk next to that that has to do with the police that we'll get back to next
Shocking.
Episode. Yeah. Oh, it's fucking, oh boy. It is worse than you can possibly imagine. But, you know, he's trying to end hunger. He has this very famous program called the Bolsa Familia, which is basically like if you're poor enough and you agree to send your kids to school and get them vaccinated, like the government will just give you money. And, you know, there's also a microloan part of this, which is my dot, dot, dot. Nothing bad will happen from the Brazilian government attempting to get a bunch of people to take microloans. This does not lead us into fascism at all. You know, okay, like this works, right? Lula is able to grow the economy. Like Brazil's economic growth in this period is like 7%, which is fucking nuts, like year on year. He leaves office with, I've seen it alternately said as like an 85 or a 90% approval rating. He's unbelievably popular. You know, so everything like looks good, right? Kind of. From inside Brazil, it looks like the PT has succeeded beyond the wildest dreams of everyone. They've been a successful social democratic party in that they've lifted a bunch of people out of poverty. There's like people who are alive because like who are alive today who would not be because the PT was in power. Right. And, you know, there are people who don't starve. There are people who don't go hungry. There are people who have opportunities like educational opportunities, who have opportunities to advance themselves for the first time ever. And it's a successful capitalist government, too, because, again, 7% year-on-year growth. Right. Like this is fucking nuts. Like this is the kind of economic growth that is like unimaginable in most parts of the world. However, if this had all actually worked, we wouldn't be here right now with the fascist president going into like hiding. And so next episodes, you know, March, I've been talking about gravediggers sort of this episode, right? There's a famous part of the Communist Manifesto where Marx talks about capitalism producing its own gravediggers. And capitalism has never done that, right? To this day, right now, capitalism has yet to produce its own gravediggers. Social democracy has produced its own gravediggers in every single fucking country anyone's ever done it. And in next episode, we're going to watch the PT produce its own gravediggers, and we are going to watch them attempt to bury Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and the rest of the Brazilian working class alive.
Oh, good. Do you want to do a Bolsonaro update? Because he's apparently left the building.
Oh shit! Okay, yeah. Bolsonaro. Wait, Bolsonaro has left the building. Hold on. Breaking news.
Yeah,
he left the palace finally.
Yeah, in a convoy of black SUVs.
Oh, he's expected to break the silence.
Yeah, but so I'm looking at Benjamin Fogel, who's pretty good on this. He's expected to break the silence, but not to congratulate Lula on winning.
Jesus Christ!
I have lost. Goodbye.
Oh, no. Okay, so yeah, there might be a if. I don't know what we're going to do if there's a coup in between this episode and the next episode.
Yeah, it will be.
Hopefully not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that like I will say and that I think we're going to talk a bit about next episode is that like part of what's happening right now that's very important is that Biden is in office in the U.S. And I mean, okay, so the Brazilian military has a long history of doing coups, but usually when they're doing coups with the backing of the U.S. government. And Biden, like, just on a personal level, fucking hates Bolsonaro. And there is a very real chance that this is a significant factor in why we haven't seen a coup, is literally the president of the United States personally does not like the fascist president of Brazil. And this is a fucking batshit state of affairs, right? Like, the fact that, like, the, like, personal inclinations of the president of the United States has this much of an impact on, like, the politics of an entire country is nuts.
And this happened in the other direction for a while, right? Like, it's, I guess, not personal, it's just the personal inclination of the president in that case.
Yeah, well, there's weird things here, too, because, like Lula was weirdly friendly with Bush, which I think is why, part of why he never, like, they never tried to coup him.
As opposed to Chavez, who called him the devil.
Yeah, which is really interesting, because Lula and Chavez are friends.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah. And Chavez gives the speech about how, like, everyone has their own, like, at the World Social Forum, gives a speech about how everyone's existing in their own, like, conditions, so you can't expect, like, you know, you can't expect Lula to be Chavez, you can't expect Chavez to be Castro, like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's weird. Hopefully Bolsonaro fucking leaves office. If not, I don't know. But either way, I don't know. Things are... The history of Brazil during this period is also kind of bleak, but after this period is way the fuck bleaker. So yeah, we're gonna talk about that tomorrow, and yeah, we'll update you if there is a coup.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.